it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Welcome to This is the Jet Life with Dan Burnham, your guide to the New York Jets, sports, and much more. And now, your host, Dan Burnham.
What is up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of This is the Jet Life. Tonight's episode is going to be breaking down the highly anticipated New York Jets 2024 draft haul. And this was a draft where the Jets came into this thing with a top 10 pick. We didn't know which direction Joe Douglas was going to go. It was probably going to be on the offensive side of the ball, but who or what position group? A lot of debates there. We didn't have a second round pick because of the trade for Aaron Rodgers last year, but we had some extra day three picks, and there were a lot of good position groups that were really deep that the Jets needed to address in this one for depth. We came into this draft without a lot of holes on the roster, at least not at starting roles, but there were some spots that key depth positions and players that, what if Tyron Smith goes down? What if Mike Williams doesn't get healthy? You know, who's going to step up to the plate? Who are the Jets going to be able to bring in to help supplement the risky starters that we have right now? So this episode is going to break down how Joe Douglas navigated the 2024 draft, and then it's going to break down the Jets' seven selections, as well as the big list of undrafted free agents that we've brought in. I've got a father time, what's on tap, and that's basically the gist of this whole thing. I'm also going to do a little bit of news and notes regarding the Jets, a couple things that happened in the past week or so since the last podcast episode, but that's what we got for this one. As far as the schedule goes, I think I've mulled it over. I don't think I'm going to do a schedule release breakdown. I think that it's boring. We know what teams they're going to play, whether or not they play the Buffalo Bills in October or November, whether or not it's a Thursday night or a Sunday night. There's a few little knickknacks and paddywhacks you can find along the way, like what are the primetime games? How far do they have to travel? What are the big long stretches between going across the country and then back maybe? Do they have to go to the UK or anything for a game? That stuff's interesting, but we know who they're going to play. You can see the teams. It's been set since the end of the regular season. And so we're going to probably just take a break until training camp previews, which is a ways away, but it's going to give me some time to focus on some other stuff, take the year off, which I usually do. So I'm looking forward to that. This is going to be the last podcast until then. So hopefully we got some good things to talk about. And I think looking through this draft class and what Joe Douglas did, I think that we do. So as always, if you like this podcast, rate, review, subscribe to this podcast anywhere they're found. It's under the Fans First Sports Network. You can also follow me on Twitter at Jets_Dan. All right, let's get into this thing, starting with the news and notes. During the draft, the Jets trade John Franklin Myers to the Broncos for a 2026 sixth-round pick, which basically is nothing. I mean, a 2026 sixth-round pick has absolutely no value, and we don't even get it next year. Joe Douglas doesn't know if he's going to be on the team at that point or not, but you have to add something into the trade, right? You can't just, like, give John Franklin Myers to the Broncos. It's got to be something in return. And the Jets are going to be saving basically $7 million by getting rid of John Franklin Myers, which is important to the team. to create that cap space at this point in time as they're bringing in a bunch of different people, reworking some contracts of existing players. But it does thin out our defensive end group and our defensive line group because John Franklin Myers did have that flexibility to go inside or play outside. He's a guy that was, you know, kind of a diamond in the rough pickup we got from the Rams. He'd had a couple good seasons with them, but hadn't really popped yet. When we got him, he started playing really, really well. We gave him that big-time contract, a long-term contract. He was super ecstatic to get that, and he's been a really good, serviceable pro for the Jets. It's been able to do a lot of different things. That said, these days, as he's gotten a little bit older, his pass rush isn't really as fast or dynamic as it once was. It was never a huge, like, positive to his game, but he was able to get after the quarterback. Recently, it slowed down a little bit. Really good against the run, a great team guy that always shows up for you, and we're going to miss him. The question basically comes down to, do you want to pay him that money? What are you going to get? You're probably not going to keep him next year, and what are you going to do with the $7 million that you save? Because if it just goes to nothing, then I think that that's a bummer. We need a John Franklin Myers. If we're going to do something good with it, which I think coming up we did, then it's not so bad. The Jets do have a kind of thin defensive line now. I think the expectation is going to be to play Jermaine Johnson and Hassan Reddick at percentages that maybe we haven't seen from the Jets defensive linemen in the last few years. We've seen a lot of like 50-60% from the guys that play a lot because you had so many different dudes rotating on that line. And they love to have that rotation. But when you look at a team like the 49ers, which basically Robert Saleh and Jeff Ulbrich try to mimic that exact team, honestly, the way that it's built and everything, they don't rotate nearly as much as the Jets do. Nick Bosa is on the field a little bit more than a Jermaine Johnson or something, or Hassan Reddick, and I think that this year maybe they're trying to move in the direction of maybe these guys don't play 80-90% of the snaps, but maybe we can rely on Reddick and Jermaine Johnson to play 70-75%, 80% some weeks, and then you don't have the need for as much of a rotation. We'll see how they do that. If they don't go that route, they're going to have to pick somebody else up or play one of these undrafted free agents that they got at the defensive line spot. Another news, Elijah Vera Tucker, his option was picked up. That's going to be $15.3 million for 2025. So we have him this year already, but you have to decide for the 2025 season right now whether or not you want to give a first year or a first contract, first round draft pick, that extension. The Jets have elected to do so. It's a guaranteed $15.3 million, not a number the Jets picked. That's an NFL number. And that's where some of that money potentially for John Franklin Myers could end up rolling into. Elijah Vera Tucker is one of those guys that, you know, we want to build a team around because he's so valuable. He's been able to do so many things for this team and do it at such a high level. The problem is he played 16 games the first season. The last 2 years combined, he's only played 12 games. He played 7-5. So we're not getting enough playing time out of Elijah Vera Tucker. And it begs the question, is he a guy that's quote-unquote injury-prone? Is he a guy that maybe was playing out of position and because he was playing tackle and already had short arms as an offensive lineman to begin with, was, you know, stressing his body a little bit more? That's how he tore the triceps. Is it something that if we can settle him into a guard role or a place in this team, he can be a very, very good, dynamic, interior offensive lineman for a long period of time? That's the hope. We still may need him to be flexible as injuries and things come up because at the end of the day, the most important thing is keeping Aaron Rodgers healthy, whatever it takes to do that. But I think Elijah Vera Tucker, the goal is to get him back healthy. Two unlucky seasons in a row, but the player that we've seen on the field is definitely good enough and worthwhile to have under contract. So for $15.3 million to have him shirt up, I think you got to do it. Then the last bit of news, this one's crazy. Another trade with the Broncos. This time it's Zach Wilson going to Denver. And this comes as no surprise. We knew that the Jets wanted to move on from Zach Wilson. It's Aaron Rodgers' team for this year. Tyrod Taylor is going to be the backup for this year, as the Jets were said in the offseason that they didn't even have a backup last year, having Zach Wilson. So clearly it wasn't going to be him as the backup. There were some sour grapes. Zach Wilson wanted a new opportunity. The Jets wanted to get that contract off of the roster. And they also probably wanted to have a new young player to develop in behind Tyrod Taylor and Aaron Rodgers. You can bring in a third quarterback that doesn't have to play for a year and can learn from those guys. They didn't want to waste the time on Zach Wilson yet again. They decided to go a different route. So Zach Wilson was a cut candidate. A lot of people were saying he had to be cut. I said just hold on, wait, because you will find somebody who will either give you some draft capital or eat some of that contract. And the Jets were able to find a team that did both. No, we didn't come away with a second-round pick like we did with Sam Darnold, but we did come away saving $5 million from Zach Wilson's contract this year and basically moving up 50 spots in the draft from pick 256 up to 203. So it was significant movement in the draft. Obviously, it's not a really important round to pick in. Sixth-round picks are not even coin flips. They're worse than that, but the Jets were able to get something out of it. Zach Wilson gets to start fresh. And he's on a team right now that's got Jarrett Stidham, Bo Nix, him, Ben DiNucci. I mean, there's an opportunity for him to actually win that job week one. Maybe Sean Payton is some sort of, you know, I think he's a self-proclaimed quarterback guru. Maybe he thinks he can untap that potential from Zach Wilson. I'll be rooting for the guy. I'd like to see him play well, just like I'm rooting for Sam Darnold in Minnesota. But at the end of the day, the Jets have to move on with the quarterbacks that we have. Zach Wilson was a failed experiment, and the Jets miss on yet another quarterback. There goes one more jersey of mine. Retired in the closet, never to be worn again. That is the Jets news and notes. So, the bulk of this episode, what we're going to talk about is the Jets draft class. And the first thing I want to do, because Joe Douglas does his classic stuff, which is like mid-rounds in the draft, he moves around so much. He doesn't pick from the spot that he's in hardly ever when it comes to like the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds. He just like combines two to get one, then takes one to get two, and he's moving up and down, back and forth, and it gets very confusing. So the Jets didn't pick at the initial spots that we thought they were going to. So I'm going to go through what happened in terms of the draft picks and the trades, and then from there we can just talk about the players separately and individually. So basically recapping what Joe Douglas did. We had the 10th overall pick in the draft. The Jets traded pick 10 and pick 203 to the Vikings to get pick 11, 129, and 157. So already we're in trouble because Joe Douglas has way too many picks to work with here. But this was a genius trade to go from 10 to 11 because the Vikings were the team at 11. We knew they were going to take J.J. McCarthy no matter what. The Jets were able to pick the exact same player they were going to take at 10, but now at 11, adding that pick 129 and 157. And all the Vikings really did, what they traded for, was the comfort in knowing that the Jets weren't going to trade the pick to the Raiders or Broncos or something else. The Jets basically bluffed the Vikings into those picks. Great to have them. At pick number 11, the Jets draft left tackle Olu Fashanu out of Penn State. Then the Jets trade pick 72 and 157 to the Panthers for pick 65, moving up seven picks in the third round to select at pick number 65 wide receiver Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky. The Jets aren't on the clock again until 111. When it finally gets to 111, we trade the pick to the Packers for pick 126 and 190. Now we're waiting for pick 126. We get there. The Jets trade pick 126 to the Lions for a 2025 third-round pick. So that was one that I really did like. I was waiting to draft all day in that third round and couldn't wait to get on the board. And here we go. Come on, there's some great players I really want. I think Jaden Hicks may have been on the board at that point. Really wanted to get him. But when you look at Joe Douglas trading a fourth rounder this year for a third rounder next year, one, it increases our value next year. Two, it gives us the ability and flexibility to move around in next year's draft, up, down, whatever they have to do, the way that he does. And three, it shows some vision for the future from Joe Douglas, which I know that this is a win now year and Joe Douglas is on the hot seat, but you really don't want to operate through those parameters of being like, nothing matters, sell the farm, got to win this year. He didn't do that. He looked for some draft capital next year, said that's better than having the pick this year in regards to who was on the board. And whether he's the GM or not, it's just nice to have some forward thinking and not be completely overcome by this idea that, like, I need to win right now and let's sell it all. Because we've seen GMs do that plenty of times for other teams and just obliterate the salary cap and obliterate the draft and everything, just trying to win and save their jobs. Glad to see that didn't happen. So we traded 126 for that 2025 third-round pick. Then it's finally our turn to pick at 129. We trade that pick to the 49ers for 173 and 176. The Jets finally decide to draft at pick number 134, and they take running back Braylon Allen from Wisconsin. Then we trade pick 185 and 190 to trade up with the Eagles to pick number 171. At 171, we draft quarterback Jordan Travis out of Florida State University. At pick 173, we draft running back Isaiah Davis from South Dakota State. At pick 176, we draft defensive back Quantez Stiggers from the Toronto Argonauts in the CFL. And then at pick number 257, Mr. Irrelevant is drafted, safety Jalen Key from Alabama. So finally, after all those trades, the Jets do make some picks with the final four in this draft. They end up with a draft class of seven players, and I'm really excited about this draft class for a lot of different reasons. Some of the guys I was really targeting, some guys I'm excited to see play that I wasn't necessarily targeting. I like the overall value that Joe Douglas brought in. I like the positions that he addressed. I like that he went after offense early. Still got some guys to supplement on defense for that depth. But before I get into my thoughts on everything and all the players in this draft class, I think it's fair to give my dad the first go at this thing, because he's been doing this draft preview stuff and paying attention to this for a lot longer than me. So these are my dad's thoughts on this week's Father Time, written by my dad, David Burnham. Here we go. There are some good players still available, but free agency has dwindled. Mekhi Becton is now an Eagle as the swing tackle. But even if there are players around, I don't expect JD to make another move. And speaking of moves, how many did Joe make? I lost count. But all said, I'm happy with the draft. I wanted a tackle, and we got a good one in Olufoshanu. He seems smart and is very good at pass blocking, especially when you consider he's a 315-pound 21-year-old. I really believe Olu is going to be our left tackle for many years. Malachi Corley will be interesting to watch. Not a crisp route runner, but he's all about yak. We can consider him a Debo Jr. as the Jets continue to mimic Saleh's former team. It also looks clear that the 2024 Jets will be moving to a more vertical gap run scheme instead of the wide zone concept. The Moses and Simpson signings hinted at it, and the addition of Braylon Allen at 245 pounds makes it clear the Jets will be ready to play smash-mouth football in 2024. Allen, this 240-pound running back, is the youngest player in the entire NFL. He won't turn 21 until we're in the playoffs in 2025. How big is he going to get? After free agency in the draft, I see this. I see the Bills and Dolphins dismantling after unsuccessful runs at a Super Bowl. I see rookie coach Gerard Mayo in flux with two rookie quarterbacks, and it looks like the Patriots will be occupying the AFC East basement. And I see a rising, improving New York Jets team, more talented and more deep than last year. I see the Jets as the team ready to take the division and more. We are the team to beat. Go Jets. End scene. So, wow. That was some incredible stuff from my dad. And the way he ended, just saying the Jets are the team to beat, it seems crazy. I kind of feel like we were coming towards this last year, but it wasn't quite there because the Bills were still obviously the team to beat. The Patriots hadn't truly fallen yet. And the Dolphins, they'd invested a lot. But he's totally right. Like, the Bills are not as scary as they were this time last year. They basically have no wide receivers. Their offense is totally limited. And they lost a lot of really good veterans on defense, too. When you look at the Dolphins, they have spent a ton of money. And they haven't really gotten all that much better. They haven't reached the ceilings they should have. And they don't really have much time left to do this. I don't think that that team is going to be making it as far as they originally anticipated. The Patriots, they should still stink. They're going to be starting two different rookie quarterbacks. You know, we'll see. Drake May probably will win the job. They drafted him. They have Joe Milton over there, too. Jacoby Brissett is a guy that they can easily turn to. But at the end of the day, like, if we can't beat a Jacoby Brissett-led Patriots, one of the weakest rosters in the league, with a rookie head coach, you know, come on. Now's the time. We have the roster. We have the players. And after the draft and free agency, you can really see that we have the best roster in the division. We just have to stay healthy. And we have to capitalize on it. I love that he's talking about Malachi Corley and Olufoshanu as being really good, interesting players. I agree with Fashanu being a left tackle for the Jets for many years, and I think that having some development early is going to be great for him. Malachi Corley being that yards after catch running back style wide receiver is going to be very interesting to watch as well. And he's as obsessed with Braylon Allen as I am right now, because going into the draft, he wasn't really on my radar. I looked at running backs, and I found a couple guys that I liked, but I didn't go crazy in that class. Didn't think there was a ton of crazy talent to devote my time to. The more I've looked at Braylon Allen since the draft and really learning about him and what he can do, the more excited I am. This guy looks like an absolute tank, a beast, and 240 pounds with speed and consistency and a lot of experience coming in to fight to be the number two running back for this team. It's going to be nice. if the Jets do go to a more smash mouth football, you know, in the gap type of scheme, it's going to be interesting because last year we played that wide zone and it allowed for some really nice breakaways for Breece Hall, but it was so bad when Breece Hall went up the middle. And I felt like running that wide zone scheme, we still tried kind of putting a round peg in a square hole too many times going up the middle. It wasn't built for that. Breece Hall is not built for that. If they love this play and they love running a 22 hammer or a trap play or whatever they want to do up the middle over and over, let's do it with a big body guy every once in a while that can really put a shoulder under a dude and pick up a yard or two. Braylon Allen looks like he can be that. Breece Hall is going to get a couple extra rests. Having some players in that rotation that are going to be a little bit more worthwhile to play than what we had last year. A lot of great things coming from that. My dad is right. It's time to be excited. It's time to take this division, and there's not that much more for the Jets to do right now except for get through training camp and get to the season healthy. Looking at the extra free agents and the guys that are available, like, we don't really need them right now. We have our roster. We just have to get there, get everybody to the season safe, happy, and healthy, and then ride. See what happens. So thank you very much for the Father Time, Dad. This was a fantastic one. Much appreciated. Now, before we go over to the individual selections and talking about all the players the Jets drafted, we do have to take a quick commercial break.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Alrighty, and welcome back to This is the Jet Life. So we are going to break down the picks that Joe Douglas made on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in the draft, all seven guys that we took, as well as the undrafted free agents. But just kind of looking through how Joe Douglas navigated the draft class and everything, compared to my preview episode that I did about 2 weeks ago talking about what I thought were the most priority positions for the Jets and then my players that I really liked from each position group, he nailed it. My top priority was an offensive tackle. We got that first. My second priority was a slot wide receiver. We got that second. Then I had listed a running back and a quarterback. We got those two picks as the next two positions that we drafted. I wanted a safety and interior offensive line. We got a safety at the end of the draft, added in some other defensive backs, another running back to mix in there, no interior offensive line. But overall, positionally, he crushed it. And then when you look through the players that I had on my list, he crushed that as well in terms of what I was looking for from the Jets. So when you talk about some years I hit with Joe Douglas and other years I don't, this year was absolutely a hit. And historically, the drafts that I agree with Joe Douglas are the drafts that end up turning out really, really freaking good. And I look at this draft class and I see a ton of potential and a ton of like just star power and ability to be more than just, you know, some depth guys. Yeah, they will be this year, but when they have opportunities to play, man, we got some absolute studs in there. So, very pleased with how he handled it. The first pick in this one at pick number 11 was Olu Fashanu. This guy's a 6'6", 312-pound left tackle from Penn State. He started there for 2 years, and in reality, he could have come out last year and probably been a first-round pick. He has been one of the best offensive tackles in college football for 2 years now, but he wanted to finish up getting his degree and graduate. Oh no, that's like such a great guy. You hear him in interviews, he's smart, he's professional, and in a way he kind of reminds me of DeBrickshaw Ferguson, partially because they're just really good, humble, smart kids, but also because their play style, a little bit more finesse and pass blocking than road grading, run stuffing. You know, Mekhi Becton was kind of a big brawling bulldozer. Olu Fashanu is a little bit more footwork, a little bit more finesse, a little bit more pass blocking. And I think that's very important for a pass-first league on a Jets team that's never really had a good pass-first offense. Olu Fashanu will have an opportunity to sit as the backup tackle behind Tyron Smith, who's probably one of the best guys in the entire league to teach him. Tyron Smith will be a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he might only be here for 1 year, but if Olu Fashanu can sit behind him for half the season or the whole season, learn, absorb, and really come ready to take the torch, whatever time that may be, I'm really excited about that. And like I said, when you look at my list of guys that I wanted. My number one choice in this draft was Joe Alt. He was not available. My number two was Talisfuaga. And he, I think, is a little bit safer of a pick, but plays right tackle. The Jets felt that the value was at left tackle. Olufoshanu, that was my number three choice for the Jets to take at pick number 10. They pick at 11. They add another mid-round pick. And I couldn't be happier with the way that it went. Welcome to the team, Olufoshanu. I hope you don't have to play right away because I can't wait to see Tyron Smith. But when you do, I know it's going to be good. And with the Jets' second pick, it was the first pick of the third round. The Jets traded up from 72 to 65, moving up seven picks, to take Malachi Corley, a 5'11", 215-pound slot receiver from Western Kentucky. This guy is basically known as the Yak King because in 2022, he led the entire nation in yards after the catch. In 2023, you look at his stats, 101 catches, 1,295 yards, 11 touchdowns. The guy catches the ball behind the line of scrimmage or right in front of it, and he just goes. Part of the reason is being he was a running back in high school, and he's essentially a running back that's playing out at wide receiver. The guy likes to go up the middle. He likes to put his shoulder into guys. He likes to get extra yards. Doesn't tackle himself. Doesn't look to go out of bounds. The guy fights. And when you look at the way that Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh and Nathaniel Hackett drafted him when they made a phone call to him, this guy runs angry and violent, and that's what they want to see more of. This guy was my number three slot receiver for the Jets, which was one of my most important positions for this team. Because now you can roll out Garrett Wilson, absolutely. And then Mike Williams when he's healthy, Alan Lazard as a backup. And instead of playing Xavier Gibson as potentially your wide receiver three playing at the slot, you get to potentially put Malachi Corley there as a little bit more of a weapon for the offense, a little bit more physical makeup. And it gives Xavier Gibson an opportunity to compete with him and see what can happen there. But now you've got this great receiving group and room of like five, six guys. You're probably going to include Irvin Charles to play special teams. But Malachi Corley is going to be that perfect safety blanket for Aaron Rodgers, who, when he's under pressure at 40 years old, and he's like, I got to just dump this ball up, and you got Malachi Corley just waiting there 4 or 5 yards away from him, you can get it in his hands and let this guy run, pick up his mitt. Who knows? Instead of getting sacked, instead of throwing the ball in the dirt, you throw it to Corley. Instead of getting negative 1 yards or 0 yards, you're picking up 8, 9 yards. That's the dream for this kid. My dad was right in his father time when he said he's not a great route runner, not a super polished player, because he's not like a true wide receiver. When you talk about like at NFL level, no, he's nowhere near there. But when you talk about his ability to run with the football, it is there. His comparison would be like a Deebo Samuel. And again, like my dad said, Robert Saleh mimicking that 49er style of offense and defense. I love the Malachi Corley pick. He was my number one player at that spot. I wanted him at 72. I'm like, please stay, please stay. When the Jets trade up, I'm like, oh my God, it's got to be Corley. So at this point in the draft, I feel like I'm in lockstep with Joe Douglas, and I'm loving everything that he's doing, and I'm really excited for his next pick. But unfortunately, he continues to trade back over and over, making me freak out, wondering, like, what the heck is going on? Who are we going to take? Who are we going to take? And eventually, he decides to settle at pick number 134 to draft Braylon Allen, a 6'2", 240-pound running back from Wisconsin. Wisconsin is known for some pretty good running backs. They've had some great guys in their history. Jonathan Taylor, Melvin Gordon, Monte Ball, lots of guys. Braylon Allen is another one. And at 240 pounds, this guy is an absolute tank. When you look through his play style, his comp is A.J. Dillon. And A.J. Dillon was a dude that I really wanted the Jets to get in free agency this year. Maybe he would have cost a little bit too much money. Maybe he's trending down, got a little bit more wear on the tires. Maybe emotionally, mentally, he doesn't have the makeup for the Jets locker room. Braylon Allen, as my dad said, is the youngest player in this league. And he's coming to the Jets, potentially not even full grown. What if he gets bigger? This guy can run. This guy's got a little bit of juke moves. He's kind of a one-cut runner, like Breece Hall. He doesn't have the same breakaway speed, but he's got the ability to really lay a shoulder into a dude. Keeps his legs and knees high going through the hole in the middle, and I'm very excited to have him here. In three seasons, he had 3,500 rushing yards and 35 touchdowns for the Badgers. That is really, really good production for a pretty good program. Now, I don't think that Braylon Allen is going to compete with Breece Hall for the number one running back, but I do think that Braylon Allen should absolutely be the front runner for running back two right now. Izzy Abanaconda was very exciting coming out of Pittsburgh last year. Isaiah Davis from South Dakota State, the next pick the Jets made, also exciting. But Braylon Allen is just built different. There's not a lot of guys like this in the league. And if he can get it together and get it moving, holy smokes. Him and Breece Hall could be very, very fun to watch. He's going to compete for running back too. And another just physical guy. You look at Malachi Corley, put the shoulder in and be a run after the catch type of guy. A little bit of grit and feistiness to the offense. Then Braylon Allen, a big, huge running back who puts the shoulder down. Okay, now we're starting to get a little bit of an edge to us on offense. Something we haven't had in a while, and that's great. Now, the Jets definitely needed a running back too, right? We didn't trust Izzy Abanaconda. Xavien Valade was never going to be the number two running back. So you potentially go with Braylon Allen, but maybe he's not the guy. Maybe you need a third guy as well. You draft another running back in Isaiah Davis, and I think the idea here is like, let's just bring in a bunch of cheap running backs, and we're going to see who rises to the top. Maybe somebody gets hurt. Maybe somebody is a really good special teamer or offers a little bit more in the passing game or pass blocking. You may not keep all of them. But when it's all said and done, and you've got Braylon Allen, Isaiah Davis, and Izzy Abanaconda all fighting for two roles probably, you're going to end up leaving with two guys that you feel really good about because you had good options. I think that's what's the most important for the Jets right now, is just having a really good, deep room of offensive playmakers who are ready to rise to the occasion. Isaiah Davis is 6'1", 220 pounds, coming out of South Dakota State. He's another super physical guy that loves to run up the middle, put his shoulder in, physical style of runner. Breece Hall is super finessey, super flashy, great catches, but he's not super physical. These two guys that we drafted, they are. Dalvin Cook wasn't. Izzy Abanaconda isn't really. Michael Carter wasn't. Bam Knight, kind of. But these two guys, potentially better than that. Isaiah Davis was so productive for South Dakota State. It's a small school, so obviously the numbers are skewed and everything, but in four seasons, he had 4,500 rushing yards and 50 touchdowns. That is crazy. And there have been so many really good running backs. I think Alvin Kamara and some others that were guys that just went to small schools, weren't heard of that much, but they had a lot of production for where they played. And they finally make it to the NFL. Just like, oh, you never know. This guy was so productive for that small school. You play him, and it translates. It doesn't always, but sometimes it does. Then you find this diamond in the rough. Like, holy smokes, why didn't we see that? It's like, well, because he played for South Dakota State. Nobody's going to draft a running back from there in the first, second, third round. But the Jets get him in the fifth. He gets to compete with Braylon Allen, compete with Izzy Abanaconda. Breece Hall's already there. The offensive line is improved. The wide receiver group has improved. Aaron Rodgers is coming back, and you can't look around this offense and not get excited about basically every single piece of it at this point. And when you look at the running back room, sign me up for preseason right now. I can't wait to watch preseason because that is going to be an absolute bloodbath dogfight between those running backs to try to win running back two and running back three. Izzy Abanaconda's job is now not safe. Braylon Allen has to prove that he deserves to be that next guy. And Isaiah Davis has to figure out where he fits into the mix. Is he a special teamer? Is he going to be ahead of or behind Izzy Abanaconda? Does Xavien Valade fit in the mix? Whoever the Jets are playing, first, second, third, fourth quarter, basically at running back, is going to be a very intriguing player that I expect to see a lot from. So can't wait for the preseason for the running back room. Very cool and awesome to go offense with those picks, right? We already drafted at this point a left tackle of the future, a slot receiver who's a great weapon, and two physical running backs. Yes, we are expecting the offense to take a little bit of a boost and a bump this year. In between those two picks, Braylon Allen and Isaiah Davis, the Jets did pick a quarterback, Jordan Travis, who, I'm going to be honest, you heard it in the last podcast I did, he was my number one mid-round option for the Jets. I never considered any of the Michael Penixes or Bo Nix. Obviously didn't consider the first four guys. Jordan Travis was the guy I was looking at. It was the right point in the draft, and he was the right player in the draft. Because at 6'1", 200 pounds, coming out of FSU, he's basically a three-year starter. He's been super, super successful and is a gamer, right? He's got that X factor to him, and he doesn't have to play right now. In 2023, he was the ACC Offensive Player of the Year. He finished fifth last year in Heisman Trophy voting. He had the team, FSU, basically poised for a championship run, got hurt, broke his leg, and that's the reason that he was even available for the Jets in the 170s. Jordan Travis potentially would have won the national championship. I wouldn't expect them to beat Michigan, But you never know. He had the team fighting for that. Could have won the national championship. Could have been a first, second round pick had he stayed healthy. He didn't. He's got a broken leg. And right now, we don't know if he's going to be ready for training camp. But he doesn't have to be. Because it's Aaron Rodgers. And if it's not Aaron Rodgers, it's Tyrod Taylor. It isn't going to be Jordan Travis. It was never going to be Jordan Travis. You give him time to rest up, to heal, to learn from Aaron Rodgers, to learn from Tyrod Taylor, who are two perfect guys. I actually see Tyrod Taylor being Jordan Travis's comp in the NFL. A little bit of Jalen Hurts in him, the way he runs the football. But Jordan Travis is a gamer that we are going to be very, very happy to have, at least as like a scrappy young backup. Maybe he ends up being a Snoop Huntley type of guy who just comes in there and grits out a couple games, isn't afraid to try to push it to the limit, get his body in some danger here and there, run the football. That's fine for a backup quarterback because those roles are very important in the league. And if we had that for the last 10, 15 years, holy shit, we probably would have made some playoffs. Probably would have won some games. So he might not be ready for camp, but like I said, he doesn't have to be. This guy has the goods when he's healthy. He's got an FSU record with 10,554 yards of offense in his career. He's also got quarterback rushing records for FSU, finishing his career at 1,900 rushing yards and 31 rushing touchdowns. Those are both records for FSU, so a very good running quarterback. Only 6'1", but the guy is shifty, moves around, like I said, Jalen Hurts kind of, Tyrod Taylor. Throws pretty well, played well on a big stage, and I'm very excited to have Jordan Travis. Those are the reasons that he was my number one quarterback in the mid-rounds. They're the reasons that I'm so ecstatic to have him on the roster right now, and he's a good kid, too. So clearly, I am stoked to have Jordan Travis on the Jets, and I can't wait to watch him play. This was five offensive players in the first five picks. Joe Douglas is trying to do something here, trying to build something for this year and for the future, and I'm absolutely here for it. Now, after those first five offensive picks, the Jets do make two defensive picks, but before I get to them, I do want to take a quick pit stop at the cooler for a little What's On Tap. That is right, folks, this is What's On Tap. And today, I am drinking yet another Long Trail Brewery, same as last podcast, from the same variety pack, believe it or not. This is a Limbo IPA. So this was a Long Trail variety pack purchased by roommate Kyle. Last time I did the Pollinator, a honey sort of like little ale that was very good. This one is like the boozy hitter of the variety pack. They usually do four beers. One is like a little weird. One is really high alcohol. This is that one. This is 7.6% in a 12-ounce bottle. They list the color as being deep gold. And it's an India Pale Ale. It tastes like an old school India Pale Ale before they made the hazy stuff, before they got into New England style and West Coast style. It's just like it reminds me more of like a Dogfish Head or a Sierra Nevada, one of those just like old tried and true IPAs. High alcohol, 7.6%. I mean, it's going to get you where you're going. Maybe a little quicker than you expected. It's not delicious, but it's drinkable, and it's kind of nice drinking from a bottle. I don't drink from bottles very often because they don't fit in my mini fridge very well. So, like, you have to put them on their side, but you can only fit, like, your option is, like, 36 beers in the mini fridge or cans versus, like, 15 bottles. So I pick cans every time, but there is something nice about a bottle. Flavor comes out nice. They drink nicely. You can see how much is left in the bottle. And yeah, it's called Limbo IPA. And perhaps fitting because the Jets are kind of in limbo right now. We don't know what we have. We're in this in-between of, like, we were a very disappointing, frustrating team last year, but also on paper, like, the coolest team we've ever had. And we're trying to figure out where in the middle of that we are. Is this the coolest, best team we've ever had? Or is this just, like, another heartbreak season poised for disaster? I think that Joe Douglas has put in enough safety valves and checks to make sure that if something goes awry, we can actually keep the floor up higher than it was last year. But I don't know. We're kind of in limbo right now, eh? That is Limbo IPA. That is by Long Trail. And that is this week's What's On Tap. Now, before we close out the last two picks in the draft and the undrafted free agents, we do have to take a quick commercial break. Alrighty, and welcome back to This Is The Jet Life. So Joe Douglas opens up the 2024 NFL draft with five offensive players. He then goes to the defensive side of the ball and focuses on the defensive backfield. One, we need some safeties in the mix because we only have Chuck Clark, Tony Adams, and Ashton Davis. When you look at the cornerback group, we do have a very nice group in Sauce Gardner, DJ Reed, and Michael Carter. But DJ Reed and Michael Carter's contracts are expiring, and the Jets are going to have to figure out which one they're going to try to keep and who's going to replace them in the future. Then behind those guys, your non-starters, a little bit more sketchy guys you don't trust as much. So Joe Douglas decides to get some extra depth, maybe some special teams guys. First guy he goes with is Quantez Stiggers. When they pick him, I don't know this player, but right when he gets picked, there's a story to tell. This kid's 5'11 and 203 pounds, plays cornerback primarily, but his resume is nuts. He played some high school, didn't play in college because his dad passed away during the COVID time, so he took time off of football, decides to get back into football playing 7-on-7 fan-controlled football. Then he moves on to the CFL, playing for the Toronto Argonauts, where he ends up winning Most Outstanding Rookie of the Year for them. Because of that, he gets himself invited to the draft events, and he starts to prove himself. He's a great teammate, great guy, hard worker, and the Jets draft him as kind of a flyer in the fifth round. And at first, you're like, I mean, this guy's coming from the Toronto Argonauts. He doesn't have much of a... His resume is interesting, but it's not impressive. But when you watch him play, the guy's got good size, great athleticism. He plays like an NFL defensive back. He plays very clean, polished, hits and everything. You wonder, playing in the CFL where there's not a lot of NFL-level guys, you know, how much does it translate once you get to NFL-level guys? But if there's one thing I can say about Quantez Stiggers is he hasn't given up. He's worked really hard to get here, so you know he's a fighter. He's got that Jets mentality in him. But number two is if this guy's a fighter and he's going to try to do everything he can, this is a guy that I see competing for special teams, a guy that potentially would try to play nickel, outside cornerback, safety, whatever it takes. This guy's so happy to have an opportunity, has worked his butt off to get here, and I just can't wait to see what he does with this opportunity. I think he's one of those guys that's going to push like a Brandon Echols on special teams. Maybe even Brandon Echols in the cornerback room. We could use a little bit of extra depth there, and he's a guy that I'm rooting for right away. We shall see what happens with Quantez Stiggers, but a very fun pick for the Jets late in the draft when usually you're not getting too much. Then their last pick, Jalen Key, a 6'1", 205-pound safety from Alabama. So this guy at 6'1", 205 pounds, he's got good size, he's got athleticism, but there's nothing really special about his game. He's not great in coverage, he's not great at tackling, he's just kind of a safety without any eye-popping ability. The thing that makes him special is that he's a Nick Saban defensive back. Not very many left because Nick Saban is leaving. Nick Saban honestly is one of the best like defense coaches that you can possibly have. And I've always rooted against Nick Saban because the guy's a jerk. He's kind of like a Bill Belichick or whatever. But when you look at cultivating talent for the NFL, nobody does it better than him. Nobody gets guys ready. And honestly, his main emphasis and focus in football is the defensive backfield. And you look at the guys that he's churned out of that school, it is unbelievable the defensive backs that he pumps out. Jalen Key, no, he wasn't the best guy on that team. Khalid McKinstry, Terry and Arnold, they got defensive backs going all over the place. But at the seventh round, you know you're getting a guy who understands how NFL defenses are run. He's seen all the defense happen in front of him, the Nick Saban-style defense. He's got that mental makeup. He definitely has a great understanding of what it takes to make it be successful. And I think that you're kind of betting on the mind and the fact that he played for Nick Saban. I don't have high expectations for him, but I do believe that he would be a good person to have in training camp and in preseason. And I think that if he can maybe hone in on some crafts and keep getting better, he's probably mentally a step ahead of the other guys in this draft class. He just physically doesn't seem to be 100% where we want him to be. So another good flyer at the end. At the end of the day, there's only so many more Nick Saban defensive backs that we're ever going to get to see play that had his coaching and tutelage. So Jalen Key, let's see what he left in you. Hopefully you can play some great football for the Jets. He's going to have an opportunity to compete because our safety position is, it's weird right now. We've got like Jerick Bernard Converse potentially as the number four guy. Maybe they go bigger. They go single safety or they drop one of these cornerbacks into the safety room. I don't know how they see it playing out. I think they could still add another guy. Trey Dean maybe from last year. Maybe he's gotten a little bit better, has improved his speed and can play. But that safety position is a little weird and one that we have to really pay attention to early in the training camp. So that's our draft class, seven guys. We then go to the undrafted free agent list where we have found some very, very good players like Bryce Huff. But typically, it's a lot of practice squad guys and you never knows, you know, maybe like a Kenny Yeboah or something that like, yeah, it's a very good success story for Kenny Yeboah, but he's not close to like cracking the number one tight end spot on this team. He's just like a fringe guy who plays special teams, and that's kind of what these guys are. But every once in a while, you do find a diamond in the rough. When I look through this giant undrafted free agent class for the Jets, the first guy I look at that I'm super excited about, the guy I'm most excited about by far, is Eric Watts, because he's coming from UConn. UConn is my favorite team, honestly. I'm from Connecticut, so it's not like a spicy team. I don't expect a ton from them, but I go to the games with my buddy Ryan. I watch him on TV every week, and Eric Watts was honestly the third best player on the team. Their best player was Christian Haynes, who was a early drafted interior offensive lineman. Their second best player was this guy named Jackson Mitchell, who played linebacker, and I have no idea what happened to him and why he's not in the mix here. But then number three was Eric Watts, defensive lineman from UConn. 6'5", 275 pounds. This guy had a really nice 2022, seven sacks that year. He only had two sacks last year in 23, but he has a lot of pressures, gets after the quarterback, 6'5", he's really long, and maybe he'll never make the starting roster for the Jets. Maybe he'll never even play a snap on an NFL field, but I'm excited to have him working out with the Jets, and I'm absolutely rooting for Eric Watts, who played great football at UConn. The second guy that I'm most excited about would be Leonard Taylor, another defensive lineman, this time out of Miami. The reason I'm excited about him is just because I watched the NFL Combine. He was in it, and he stood out to me as a guy that worked really, really hard, had a high motor. And I think that when you work hard, and you have a high motor, and you have the size and the physical ability that Leonard Taylor has, sometimes it comes together. Sometimes it just was, maybe you were in the wrong scheme, maybe you weren't being utilized properly, or the way that the defense was built wasn't great for you. But if a coach can take you in, figure out what your strengths are, I think he has enough strengths physically to maybe make it work, as long as he's there mentally. Then the rest of the guys, I honestly don't really know all that much about at this point in time. You look through the rest of the group and you're like, the time that we're going to learn, it's not about what a guy did playing for Michigan or South Carolina. Oh, this guy played linebacker for Army. Like, we're not going to watch that tape and be like, okay, he's now going to be the guy of the future. These are undrafted free agents that are brought in here to compete in training camp, to push everybody to the limit, make everybody that's a starter on this team feel like, you know what, their job might not be safe because you got a young guy coming trying to gun for your job right now. These are guys that'll build out the practice squad just in case somebody gets hurt, and every once in a while, a guy pops. What we want to see isn't stuff from college, because if their college tape was fantastic, they would be drafted higher. They would have been drafted in the regular rounds. What matters for these guys is training camp, and then what matters for them is preseason. And if they can put together a good training camp and preseason, nothing else matters. The rest of this list, we'll go through it. We'll read these guys off. We'll get familiar with the names, but then we're really going to look to see who starts to step up in training camp. Who's the Xavier Gibson? Who's the Jason Brownlee? Who's the Trey Dean? Right, the guys that we're looking at like, hey, this guy's starting to make a name. We brought in Byron Pee-wee Jarrett, a quarterback out of West Florida. Tyler Harrell, wide receiver out of Miami. Marcus Riley, a wide receiver out of Florida A&M. Lincoln Sefcik, a tight end out of South Alabama. Brady Latham, offensive line out of Arkansas. Willie Tyler, offensive line, Louisville. Braden McGregor, an edge out of Michigan. Tyreek Johnson, an edge out of South Carolina. Jimmy Chiarlo, linebacker from Army. Trey Jenkins, linebacker from San Jose State. Jackson Sermon, linebacker from California. Miles Jones, cornerback from Duke. Shermer Bartholomew, cornerback from Georgia Southern. Al Blades, a safety from Duke. And Jarius Monroe, a safety from Tulane. So they brought in a big group. A little bit of everything when you talk about big school, small school, and a little bit of everything when you look at position groups. these are the guys they're going to help fill out that 90-man roster. There's probably going to be a couple more changes that the Jets will make in free agency and stuff. But ultimately, when we roll out the field for preseason and training camp, these guys are going to be out there, and we're waiting for the guy that shines. Because it's not going to be all of them. We don't know who it's going to be. But one or two of them will have opportunities to play with this Jets team. And that's kind of what it's all about. That's why I do training camp previews. That's why I do preseason breakdowns. Because those guys that are fringe guys, that's what pushes the top half of the roster. That's what builds your farm for the future. And it's just a fun little thing to keep track of and watch the growth of these players. So overall, looking through that Jets draft class, aside from the undrafted free agents, just the draft class in general, I am stoked with how we operated. I'm stoked that with all those guys that we got, we still added next year a third-round pick on top of all that. Just a little icing on top of the cake. This is a fantastic draft class. I would give it an A-, honestly. I think that maybe there was an opportunity to stick and pick a couple times and maybe grab one or two more starters. I think safety could use something. I think interior offensive line could use a backup. But at the end of the day, with the way the board fell and the way Joe Douglas navigated everything, it's at least in the A's, right? I am two thumbs up, big smiles, and now we have to wait. We have to wait for training camp. We have to wait for mini camps and all that. Luckily, there's some like new Jets media clips and videos coming out, like 40-minute episodes. I forget what the new series is called because they seem to change it every single year and season depending on when in the year it is. But there's some content coming out for the Jets. The schedule release will come out. You want to talk about it, tweet at me at Jets_Dan. Always happy to talk about the schedule, players, or anything. And aside from that, I'm going to basically be back for that training camp preview. I'm going to spend the next few months relaxing, fishing, right now watching the Rangers and the Knicks, going to start playing some softball soon. And between you and me, I'm hopefully going to be buying a house with the wife, Shannon, in the near future. So lots of cool stuff coming for me. I'm going to see you guys in a couple months. Like I said, reach out to me on Twitter at Jets_Dan. In the meantime, don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to this podcast anywhere podcasts are found, especially if you like it. It is part of the Fans First Sports Network. And that's all I got for you. Let's go Jets. I'm Dan Burnham, and this is the Jet Life.